was he to do? Let his dog be crushed or freeze to death? He studied the woodpile that stood shoulder high. He couldn't lift the log that had shifted and blocked Penny's exit, for fear of bringing the whole thing down. He'd have to start from the top and work his way down to her. And, of course, it was the part of the stack that had the heaviest logs. He'd need to be careful about the order of their removal, too, so as not to risk a collapse. This is gonna hurt like a son of a bitch. Praying he wouldn't hear or feel the pop of stitches or staples, Josh gritted his teeth, tugged the top log, and dropped it to the ground. It took him 10 long minutes to free his dog, and by the time he lifted Penny into his arms, he was breathing hard and sweat ran in rivulets down his temples. He hoped he could get back to the house without passing out. Although, he'd heard that freezing to death was a good way to go. You just go to sleep and go away. Penny whimpered. Her warm, sticky blood slid across his forearms. She had some bad abrasions on her belly. He'd need to tend to them before he crawled back into bed or into a snowdrift to die. Upon reaching the stepping stone walk, he stared at Penny's wheelchair and wondered if he had the intestinal fortitude to bend over one more time to pick it up. If I do it and fall down and can't get back up, that's not suicide, right? I'm caring for my dog. He figured he must be delirious from the pain when he heard Celeste speak to him. Now don't be silly, Joshua. He let out a cry like a warrior on a battlefield as he bent and scooped up the wheelchair by the frame. He carried it and the 8-pound dog into the house, then sat Penny into the kitchen's farmhouse sink. He was vaguely aware that his hands were shaking as he washed the scrapes and applied the ointment Lori had prescribed for situations like these. He was acutely aware of the pain in his gut as he carried the dog to her bed, and of the coughing fits that racked him as he rinsed the blood from his sink. As his whole body began to shake when he changed out of his blood-stained shirt, and the thought of lying in the snow took hold, he accepted that he could take no more. The war was over. The battle lost. He picked up the phone, dialed the local pharmacy, and surrendered. Maybe it's better this way, he told himself as he warmed up his tea and sat at the kitchen table to drink it. The choice had been made. The die cast. The Rubicon crossed. It was too late to second-guess himself. Too late to indulge in maybes or what-ifs. It was time for Caitlin to go home. I should have stopped by the yoga studio for a class before coming here, Caitlin muttered as she approached Josh's house. If she were in a cartoon, she'd be Wile E. Coyote's round black bomb with its sparkling, steadily shrinking fuse. She was about to explode. She'd made the 12-minute walk from Angel's Rest to Josh's house in 8 minutes 30 seconds, fueled by adrenaline, her thoughts whirling like falling leaves on an autumn wind. She had questions, lots of questions, and she wanted answers, immediately, from her father, from her lover. She was tired of being kept in the dark by the men in her life. When I finish with Josh, I'm going out to Heartache Falls and having it out with my dad. But first, Josh owed her an explanation. She intended to be cool, calm, and collected when she showed him the magazine article and asked her questions. After all, she could be way off the mark. She didn't think she was, though. She opened the front door and stepped inside, pulling off her gloves and tucking them into her pockets. He wasn't in the family room. She checked his office, then the media room, and finally, the kitchen. He was sitting at the table, staring down into a mug of something hot. He didn't look up when she came in, and his lack of attention fanned her smoldering fuse. She demanded, "Are you J.B. Trammell?" So much for calm, cool, and collected. Her heart pounded. Her mouth went dry. A full 30 seconds passed before he answered with a simple, "Yes." Caitlin released a heavy breath, and she tried to absorb the news. Josh was J.B. Trammell. She gaped at him, waiting for further explanation. Explanation that never came. He didn't give her anything. Didn't say a single word. She wanted to smack him in the ribs. Yes? That's all you're going to say? He shrugged slightly, and after a long pause asked, "Want my autograph?" She couldn't explain why, but that hurt more than anything. It sliced right through the defense of anger and wounded her heart. She stood there speechless, trying not to cry, wondering how life had taken such a fast, terrible turn, when he finally spoke again. Rather than providing answers, he casually asked a question of his own.
"How did you find out?"
She pulled the magazine folded to the article out of her tote and dropped it onto the table in front of him. His lips twisted in a wry grin.
"Ah, I was cute, wasn't I? They told me I was an angel."
Finally, she found her voice. "Has it all been a lie, Josh? Or should I call you J.B.? Is it some sort of holly weird experiment? Go live like the common folk for a while to add authenticity to a role? How could you do this to us? To me and the people of Eternity Springs who invited you into our lives and hearts? Why the masquerade? Does Brick know the truth about you? Has he been lying to us too?" Again, there was a long pause before Josh responded.
"Brick doesn't know. He's never known. The Christophers respected my privacy. Will you? Are you going to out me, Caitlin?"
"Why shouldn't I? I'm not a liar, unlike someone else in this room. Why shouldn't I let everyone in town in on your little secret? Explain it to me, Josh. Make me understand."
"Technically, what I've told the people of Eternity Springs is the truth, just not the whole truth. I am Josh Tarkington, just as much as I am J.B. Trammell. Why I have two separate and distinct lives is my business. My privacy is important to me. And I told you from the beginning not to have expectations where I'm concerned. You're my friend, not my wife. There are limits to what friends need to know."
Caitlin took the words like a blow, and she reached for a chair back to steady herself. It only got worse.
"I've enjoyed your company," he went on. "I really enjoyed the sex, but I'm afraid I haven't been at my best of late, so I didn't notice the signs. I think the events of the past month gave you the wrong impression about where you and I might be headed. It's getting a little too domestic around here. I appreciate having had your help. You've been a great friend and a real help to me. But I'm getting along fine now. I think it's probably time you moved back home."
She sucked in a breath. "You're breaking up with me."
"I'm a selfish bastard. I enjoyed you, and I let it go too far for too long. I'm sorry, Caitlin. It was poorly done of me."
"He's breaking up with me." Her knees went weak, and it was all she could do not to double over from the blow. Suddenly, she wanted away from Josh J.B. Trammell Tarkington as fast as she could possibly manage. She was going to cry, and pride wouldn't let him see her tears. Without a word, she fled the kitchen, blinking back tears, her heart breaking, her stomach churning with a combination of fury and hurt, unlike anything she'd felt before. In the guest room, she opened the closet and yanked her suitcase from a shelf. Luckily, she didn't have all that much to move, since she'd only brought everyday items with her. It took her less than 5 minutes to empty the closet and bureau drawers. In the bathroom, she tossed makeup and toiletries into a backpack. The last piece of furniture to empty was the bedside nightstand. She picked up the paperback she was currently reading and tossed it into her suitcase, along with her computer and electronics cords. Then she drew a deep breath and slid open the nightstand drawer to reveal the two black velvet jewelry boxes. With a trembling hand, she removed them, opened them, and stared down at the contents. What were they called? S-something emeralds? Sorbeck? Saracen? No. Sokolov. The Sokolov emeralds. Guess she'd been a real idiot not to recognize these as real, although she was pretty sure she'd never seen jewels like these outside of a museum. And why in the world would it have occurred to her that they were anything other than costume? The man portrayed himself as an engine mechanic. Why would she think he had real jewelry to give? Should she have suspected him of burglary? He'd gifted her with a fortune in jewels, right before he sent her away. I'm like the Duke's mistress in a romance novel, dismissed after he meets his heroine. A soft, sour laugh escaped Caitlin's lips. Josh had warned her. He'd been totally honest about his wishes and his walls. She'd been the one to ignore them. She'd been the pursuer in their relationship, not him. She'd believed she could overcome his objections. A siege? She'd launched her catapults, shot her arrows, swam the stupid moat, and his walls stood strong as ever. She'd failed. She'd been vanquished. The castle walls weren't in ruins. She was. She'd lost. Caitlin snapped the boxes shut and tossed them on the bed. She lifted her backpack, picked up her suitcase, and headed for the mudroom and her coat. Josh, or J.B., had yet to move away from the kitchen table. In a perfect world, she would have the perfect parting shot sitting on her tongue. In reality, the sight of him saddened her, and she couldn't think of anything clever, so she crossed the room in silence. He didn't look up from his drink. She set down her luggage in order to slip into her coat. Penny rolled up beside her, and Caitlin took a moment to pet her before removing her gloves from her pocket and pulling them on. I left Penny's heartworm tablets on top of the washing machine. Thanks. She slung the strap of her backpack over her shoulder. Come on, Timberlake. Think of a zinger. She opened the door, picked up her suitcase, and couldn't think of a single thing to say to him other than goodbye. She wasn't quite ready to say that. So she remained silent as she stepped outside. As she reached for the doorknob to shut the door behind her, Josh finally spoke.
You deserve better, Caitlin.
I know that, Josh. At this particular moment in time, and under these particular circumstances, she knew there was nothing else to say. So Caitlin closed the door.
Journal entry. Today I looked at baseball cards. It's an awesome collection. There's a Joe DiMaggio, a Ted Williams, a Hank Aaron. Too many prizes to count. It took me a while to figure out that he had them grouped by league, then team, then position. Infield, outfield, catchers, and pitchers. I thought about Drew Bear. Wondered why he'd called the game early. Did he have a Sherman of his own? A Tormento? Did he spend a lot of time thinking about it, planning it? Or was it an impulsive, reckless act? I flipped through the box. Second baseman, Joe Morgan, Pee Wee Reese, Bump Wills. Shortstops, Ozzie Smith, Maury Wills, Derek Jeter. Why are Lou Gehrig, Roberto Clemente, and Lyman Bostic out of order? I thought a few minutes and figured it out. They died. They were all players who died young. Guess that answered my question. Not recklessness, then. Genetics.
Chapter 19. Caitlin nursed her wounded heart overnight in the privacy of her little rental house on 3rd and Pinion. She lay awake, tossing and turning, and mentally replaying the events of this day and those of the past 4 months. From that electric moment in Telluride, when her and Josh's gazes first met, to the wicked games they'd played at Brick and Lily's wedding, to the laughter they shared, the early morning runs, the late-night conversations. Had none of that been real? Had it all been as false as his name? She didn't want to believe it. She didn't know what to believe. She felt lost. She wished she were home. She wished she could go beg a hug from her mom or crawl up into her daddy's lap and bury her head against his chest and cry. Except that was a whole other problem, wasn't it? Her parents had a problem they hadn't shared with her, She knew it as certain as... well, as certain as the fact that her lover was a liar. She finally drifted off to sleep, thinking that she seriously couldn't deal with another secret for one more day. When she awoke the following morning, she decided to do something about it. She picked up some cinnamon rolls from the bakery, drove up to Heartache Falls without calling ahead, and walked into her parents' home through the kitchen door without knocking. "Mom? Dad? Caitlin?" Her mother's surprised voice came from the front of the house. "We're in here." Caitlin set down the bakery box, then walked to the great room. There, an open book and reading glasses showed that her mom had obviously risen from her usual spot on the sofa. Her father reclined in a big leather chair that hadn't been there the last time Caitlin had visited. He didn't get up, which was understandable if he'd twisted his ankle. Except his ankle wasn't wrapped or swollen at all. Mac Timberlake looked tired, pale. Definitely not the vigorous father Caitlin was accustomed to seeing. Although, if she was being honest with herself, when was the last time she'd taken a long, hard look at her father? "You've been avoiding it. You know you have." She'd been so wrapped up in Josh and his problems that she'd ignored the troubles up at Heartache Falls. Well, no more. No more ignorance where either one of these stubborn men were concerned. "Enough of this. I'm not stupid, Daddy. What's wrong with you? Something is wrong with you. Tell me what's wrong." Mac shot Allie a quick look.
"I'm fine, honey. I think Mom told you I twisted my ankle."
"Yes, she did, while her face drained of all color." Caitlin folded her arms. "There's a recliner in Mom's living room. As long as I can remember, Mom swore she'd never have a recliner in the living room. Your office was okay. The den was okay. The living room was not okay."
"You are sick, aren't you, Dad? I need to know the truth. Please just tell me the truth."
Mac closed his eyes, swallowed hard, and took a deep breath. Caitlin's heart dropped to her toes. Her father said,
"I've had some worrisome muscle weakness and tingling in my hands, but I don't want you to fret about it. I had a complete barrage of tests and they didn't find anything."
Relief flowed over Caitlin like snow melt in the spring. "And yet..." "But you're still having symptoms? They're bad enough that you need a recliner?"
"My symptoms come and go. The recliner is,
I'm expanding my boundaries," Allie said. She lifted her chin and a militant light gleamed in her eyes. "Your dad and I agree we don't want to get in a rut." Caitlin's eyes went round. "A rut? When have the two of you ever been in a rut?"
"I rest my case."
"But enough about us." Allie offered her daughter a bright smile and asked, "So is there a special reason for this visit? How is Josh today?" Caitlin tilted her head and studied her parents. As always, they presented a united front. Her father's gaze never wavered as he watched her, and Mac Timberlake didn't lie to her. "You'll tell me if it's something serious, Dad."
"I'll tell you as soon as anything is confirmed, sweetheart. You have my word."
"Okay, then." Caitlin drew a deep breath and returned to her mother's questions. She didn't have an answer for the second one, of course, so she answered the first. "I brought cinnamon rolls from Fresh. That's always special."
"I'll make fresh coffee," Allie said.
She looked at her husband.
"Shall we have a tray here by the fireplace?"
"No."
His voice was firm.
"We'll sit at the kitchen table,"
Allie began, "but I'll use the cane. Caitlin, what's the latest on Gingerbread House?"
Caitlin was glad to keep the conversation away from Josh and on daycare matters, and she left a half hour later, reassured about her father's health. It cleared her mind for further brooding about her own problems, and brood she did. For the rest of the morning and the entire afternoon, it was all Josh all the time. She'd been vanquished from the battlefield, true. But what about the war?
Was she ready to give up? For months now, she'd said she loved him. If she truly loved him, would she walk away? Let him push her away? Wouldn't she fight for him? If she truly loved him. That was the question, wasn't it? How could she love a man whose name she didn't even know? Who was he? What were his values, his beliefs? Why was he hiding in Eternity Springs? Why had he hidden himself from her? Without answers to those questions, how could she have real, honest, true feelings for the man? But could her instincts have been so completely and totally wrong? Caitlin looked deep within herself. In her heart of hearts, she didn't believe she would be so wrong. But how could she be sure? How could she trust herself? At that point, she did the only thing she knew to do. She called her best girlfriend. Lori closed the vet clinic half an hour early, and by 5, the two women were sitting at Caitlin's kitchen table, with a tub of Rocky Road and every ice cream topping the Trading Post had on the shelves set out in front of them. As they dug in, Caitlin explained the situation and poured out her heart, ending with, "He didn't ask me to keep the movie star thing a secret, but I don't feel right about spreading it around, so I'll keep quiet," Lori assured her. "It's a fascinating bit of news, though, isn't it? I'd sure love to know the backstory there." "Or maybe not," Caitlin observed. "It could be really awful for him to have hidden it so deeply." "True." Lori gave her spoon a thoughtful lick. "So you think that's why he broke up with you? You discovered his big secret?" "I don't know. I imagine that's part of it, but who knows? He hasn't exactly been the king of communication lately." "Well, men can be total jerks, but we know that about them." Truer words were never spoken. "So what are you going to do?" "I don't know. I admit that this has given me some doubts I didn't have before. That's kind of scary." "That's kind of normal, if you ask me. The man didn't tell the truth about his identity. Big red flag there. Of course you have questions." "You want to know the really scary part? I'm pretty sure I know the answers. Well, the one answer that seems to matter most, anyway. I love him. I still love him. The way he's acted, the secrets, they don't seem to matter." She set down her spoon and rubbed her eyes. "I can't explain it, Lori, not even to myself. I just know I love him. I love him. That frightens me. What if I'm totally off base here? What if I'm wrong about him? What if he's been playing a role all along and I'm just too blind to see it? Although, I don't know that it matters one way or the other, because he broke up with me yesterday, didn't he?" "Break up, shmake up." Lori squirted a dab of chocolate sauce onto the last of the ice cream in her bowl. "If you want him, you'll fight for him. If you fight for him, you'll win. That's what you do, Caitlin." "I don't know about that," Caitlin said, frowning. "I do. The question is, do you want him? Honey, I'm going to be honest here. I think you need this break as much as Josh does." "Why?" "This love affair happened very fast. I know you've been sure of your feelings right from the beginning, but this whole thing has been out of character for you. I think this break is a good opportunity for you to give yourself time to be sure of your surety." Dryly, Caitlin asked, "Are you sure?" Lori shook her spoon at her sister-in-law. "I am. Besides, it's not like you don't have anything to do to keep you busy." "That's true. I've a million things to do before Gingerbread House's opening day." "Then get to them." Lori scooped the last of her ice cream onto her spoon, swallowed it with sinful relish, then stood. "Now I do believe my work here is done. I'd better get home to your brother. It's my night to cook, and I promised him Tuscan chicken. Though I don't know how I'm going to eat a bite after all this ice cream." "You're welcome to join us, Caitlin. I have plenty." "No, thanks." She rose and gave her sister of the heart a hug. "All of a sudden, I'm anxious to get started on work." "Good. Yes, good. Thank you, Lori." "My pleasure." Lori gave her a wink and added, "It's also going to be my pleasure to watch Mr. Hollywood mend this breakup fence.
Winter can be long and eternity springs. I'll be glad to have the entertainment. Caitlin watched her through the kitchen window as Lori backed her veterinary practices van out of her driveway and pulled away. A faint smile played upon her face as she rinsed the dirty dishes and loaded the dishwasher. The two visits with family today had improved her spirits tremendously. Tonight, she thought she'd do a yoga video on YouTube and then take a nice long bath. She'd go to bed early, and there would be no tossing and turning this time. She wasn't going to worry about her dad. She wasn't going to wallow around feeling heartbroken. She would pour her energy and efforts into Gingerbread House and give herself time to think about exactly what she wanted from the man who lived next door. The minute Caitlin shut the door, Josh surrendered to the coughing fit he'd fought to hold back since he'd asked her to leave. When the delivery he requested from the pharmacy arrived, he didn't hesitate to throw back the maximum dose. After that, he went to bed, where he pretty much stayed for the next 3 days until a pounding on his door roused him. Harriet took one look at him and called his doctor. Josh was too sick to protest when the physician did the small town solid of making a house call. 10 days of antibiotics later, he began to feel human again, and by the first week of February, he decided he just might survive. Lonely as hell, hooked on painkillers, but alive. Damn it. He remembered something one of his rehab doctors back in the day had said. Pneumonia is God's gift to old people. It's not a bad way to die. It would have been easier if he'd just died. If Harriet hadn't been over here hounding him to take his antibiotics every damn day, he might have pulled it off. And now he was out of Percocet, and wondering where he could get some more. Dr. Alvarado wouldn't refill his prescription so soon. Neither were the doctors in Gunnison. Doctor shopping had netted him nothing. He was so effed. Why hadn't they just let him die? He hadn't heard one word from Caitlin since the day he sent her away. And he was fine with that. He didn't need her hovering over him. Neither did he need Celeste or Harriet or Lily knocking at his door. Unfortunately, they didn't take his hints. On Groundhog Day, Harriet had watched Punxsutawney Phil predict 6 more weeks of winter on the television in his kitchen, while he hid in the bathroom, shaking and shivering, and puking his guts up as he tried to resist the urge to take a pill. 3 days after Valentine's Day, when Claire Lancaster dropped by with a plate of iced sugar cookies after the baby's afternoon nap, he could move without his ribs barking at him too bad, but he was completely out of perks and contemplating driving somewhere, anywhere, to score some. He thanked Claire and walked her to the door. As he started to shut it, movement across the street caught his notice. A thought occurred. Harriet had broken her hip. Harriet had taken pain medication. What were the chances that she had a few left over? Pretty good, he'd bet. He could ask to borrow a couple. Or I could pay her a visit and ask to use the John, riffle through her medicine cabinet and steal whatever she has. A wave of relief washed over him at the thought, but that was immediately eclipsed by a tsunami of shame. You'd steal pain medicine from an old lady? You don't deserve to live, asshat. Shaken by the knowledge that he had sunk so low, Josh backed away from his front door and shut it, stared at it as if it were a snake. The snake. Temptation. Evil waited on just the other side, and if he stepped into it... I have to do something, he murmured. Damn it. He had to do something now before he did something soul-destroying. He needed something, needed it now. Needed. On the third Monday in February, Caitlin stepped away from the bulletin board and beamed, "Is that cute or what?" Her mother eyed the construction paper ladybugs, green grass and bright yellow sun, along with letters that spelled, "We're buggy about spring," and grinned. It's cute. And it's so you. You have always been a ladybug girl. I don't know why I love them so much. They are kind of creepy, and the nursery rhyme is downright scary. A wistful smile played about Allie's face.
I know why you love them. After dinner tag in the summer, remember? All the neighborhood kids would come play in our front yard.
I do remember that. The boys wouldn't let me play.
I wouldn't let you play. You were little, and it was a rough-and-tumble game. But you and I would sit on the front stoop, and there were always ladybugs flying around.
She let out a long sigh.
I miss those days.
Both Allie and Caitlin turned at the sound in the doorway. Mac stood there pulling on his jacket.
I finished your fence, Kate. Want to come see it?
I do. She walked toward her father and saw his gaze glide over the bulletin board. His smile was bittersweet.
Sometimes it's hard to believe that spring will ever come.
I know, Caitlin agreed. They are forecasting 6 inches of snow before morning, and even more during the next few days. The extended forecast looks pretty hairy, too.
Allie glanced toward the window. I know. I'm worried the weather will interfere with Stephen's ski trip.
Caitlin's eldest brother lived in Dallas now with his wife and 3 children. He and a group of old college friends had a ski trip to Wolf Creek scheduled for the first week of March. He intended to visit Eternity Springs for a few days afterward, before heading home. Mom had started planning her menus already, giddy at the thought of having all 3 of her children under the same roof for a time.
Don't fret, Allison,
Mac called over his shoulder as he led them toward the front hall.
Stephen won't let the weather prevent this trip home. He'd hire a dog sled team to get over Sinner's Prayer Pass for a pan of your lasagna.
It's true, Mom. Stephen won't... Oh... Caitlin spied the short, white picket fence attached to the hallway walls. She clapped like a child. Oh, my gosh, that's perfect! Then she shook a finger, saying, Wait a minute! She dashed into the kitchen and returned a moment later carrying a Spider-Man backpack. She hung it over one of the pickets, stepped back, and clapped again. Totally perfect! Can't you see all the little backpacks lined up on the fence?
Allie nodded. I can.
This was a darling idea, Kate. Wait until you see the nursery now that the furniture's in. It's my favorite room in the house.
Show me, show me,
Allie said with a smile.
Mac held up a hand, palm out.
I'll wait for another time if you don't mind, sweetheart. I have a few errands I need to run before the store closes.
No problem. She went up on her toes and kissed her father on the cheek. Thanks for all the help, Dad. I truly do appreciate it.
Glad to be of service.
He returned his daughter's kiss.
Anything else for my daddy-do list?
No, I think that does it. I have a few final touches to do myself, but Gingerbread House will be ready to open its doors on schedule next week.
In that case, I'll see you 2 later.
He strolled out the door. Caitlin watched her father leave with a combination of tenderness and concern. He's been in a good mood lately.
Yes, he has. He's had fun helping you around here.
His muscles don't seem to be giving him much trouble. Allie glanced after her husband.
He hasn't complained. I don't bring it up.
He's enjoying his life. That's what matters. Caitlin couldn't argue with that. She didn't have time. The past few weeks had flown by as she'd readied Gingerbread House for its opening. The work had been a godsend, especially after she'd learned that Josh had developed pneumonia. It had taken all of her willpower not to rush over to his house with chicken soup. Maternal instinct proved difficult to ignore. Lori had talked her down from the soup pot, and the Pinecone Telegraph, as Celeste sometimes called town gossip, kept Caitlin up to date on Josh's condition. She understood he was improving, so much so that she'd spent Valentine's Day in reluctant expectation. After all, she'd slept with the man for months. It wouldn't have hurt him to send a friendly card. She hadn't heard a word from him, and she'd taken the card she'd purchased for him and tossed it in the garbage. A real shame, considering the price of greeting cards these days.
Are you going to show me the nursery?
Allie asked, tugging Caitlin's attention back to the present.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Caitlin led the way upstairs to where 2 former bedrooms were now 1 big bedroom. 6 white dressers sat next to 6 white Jenny Lind cribs. Caitlin planned to give parents the option to decorate their baby's individual area, if they so desired. If not, the nursery worker would choose between a variety of themes Caitlin had on hand.
"It's lovely, honey," her mother said. She sat in one of three oversized rockers.
"These chairs are fabulous. Good choice." "You are the one who suggested them. Everything is wired, of course, so that parents can check in on their little ones whenever they wish.
It's homey, peaceful, and pretty. I love the dotted Swiss window curtains.
I want parents to consider us more as nannies than a daycare facility."
"I expect you'll pull that off."
Allie glanced around the room.
"Didn't you put an entrance to the secret room in here?"
"No, we changed that. My insurance guy said we'd be better off having only one doorway that I can keep padlocked. Liability issues. I still plan to use it as a storeroom, but I think it's best the kiddos don't know it exists."
"That's probably a good idea."
Giving her daughter a sidelong glance, Allie added,
"Speaking of good ideas, a little birdie told me that Josh..."
"Mom, please," Caitlin interrupted. "I don't want to hear about Josh Tarkington today. I'm in a good mood, and I'd like to stay that way."
"Say, have you seen the glass mobile Cicero made me for the sunroom? It's fabulous."
"All right," Allie said with a sigh. "I guess you'll talk to me when you're ready."
"No, I haven't seen the mobile."
"Come see it while the sun is still shining. It's almost like having a disco ball hanging from the ceiling."
Moments later, they stood in the sunroom gazing upward, where colors danced all over the room.
Allie smiled with delight.
"You're right. It's wonderful. The children are going to love it."
"I think so, too."
"You're building something special here, Caitlin. Eternity Springs will be a better place because of it. Dad and I are proud of you."
Her mother's words warmed Caitlin. She kept her voice light as she asked,
"Still think I should have stayed in New York?"
"No, and I should have known better." Allie linked elbows with Caitlin.
"You are the most project-oriented person I've ever known. Once you set you on a goal, you don't give up until you achieve it."
Movement outside the window caught Caitlin's gaze. Josh was leaving his house and walking toward the automotive center.
"I don't know, Mom. There is such a thing as lost causes."
"Nonsense. You know what Celeste would say about that, don't you? To risk all for a lost cause is the way great victories are achieved."
The heater kicked on and stirred the air. The mobile pieces moved and clinked together, sounding just a little like bells.
Josh paced his living room like a caged lion. Finally, he grabbed his wallet and went hunting for his keys. He hadn't used them in so long, he didn't know where to look. He wasn't sure where he'd go once he found them. He hadn't had a dealer in years. He could fly somewhere, load up, shoot up. He'd be free of this all-consuming yearning. But that would take hours and hours. Gunnison? He could probably score something in Gunnison. Might take him a little while to track down a source, but there would be one. Sources were everywhere. Except for Eternity Springs. Eternity Springs wasn't like any other place in the world. It was truly a place out of time.
Josh found his keys hanging on a key rack in his mudroom.
Where did that come from?
Caitlin, of course. He found her little touches all over the house.
He slipped the keys into his pocket, pulled on his coat, and stepped out into the winter afternoon. Though the sun was shining, clouds rolled in from the west. Looked like it might snow before long. Driving might be a bear. He just wished it wasn't so damn far to Gunnison.
Halfway to his garage in the bay where he left his car, he glanced across the street, and his feet slowed. Maybe he could ask Harriet for a pill, just one. That wouldn't be so bad, would it?
Yeah, it would. It's a slippery slope. Best not to go there at all.
He walked on to the garage. There he climbed into his car and started the engine, giving it some time to warm up. It was the first time he'd been behind the wheel in a long time. It felt good. Never mind that his hand shook like a palsied old man's.
He pulled out onto the street and drove at a snail's pace through town. While approaching the stop sign at First and Spruce, his gaze fell upon Murphy's Bar and Grill. Without making a conscious decision to do so, he pulled over and parked, then went inside. Shannon Garrett stood behind the carved wooden bar drying pint glasses. She smiled at him in surprise. "Josh, this is a nice surprise. You haven't been in since before the accident. You feeling better?"
"Yeah."
"Here for a burger?" He hesitated. "A burger wouldn't hurt."
"Yes, a cheeseburger, please.
Something to drink?"
He sucked in a deep breath. "The McAllen, a double."
"Coming up." She offered him a brilliant smile and added, "Take any seat you'd like." He sat at the end of the bar, away from where she was working, which should indicate that he didn't want to make small talk. She poured a glass of water and set it on a coaster in front of him. "Do you want me to put in your order now, or would you like your burger to arrive after you've finished your drink?"
"Why don't you wait on it?"
A moment later, Shannon set a double scotch in front of him. Josh touched the glass, stared at the amber liquid inside, but didn't immediately lift it. He remembered being 12 years old and drunk.
"Hey, kid, aren't you a pretty boy? What you hiding in those pants? Let's see it. Come on, don't be shy. Look, I'm not shy. Want to touch it? Come on. Touch me."
He remembered being 7 and watching a drunk.
"Hey, kid. Damn, you're a good-looking kid. You look just like me. Damn sure a tremel. Camera loves you. Bet the booze will, too. It's our curse, you know."
He remembered sitting in a circle surrounded by others with hollow eyes and the slumped shoulders of the hopeless.
"I hate it here. I don't want to be here. I don't belong here."
Josh ran his index finger around the lip of his glass. He still didn't pick it up.
"Go ahead. You'll love it. It's the best high ever. Tons better than booze or grass. Here, give me your arm. I'll show you how. Don't worry, it's a clean needle." "What the hell are you doing, son?"
Mac Timberlake swooped in and grabbed the glass out of Josh's hand. He set it out of Josh's reach and signaled for Shannon to come get it.
"What the hell are you doing, old man?"
Josh fired back, leaning past Caitlin's father and reaching for his drink.
"Saving your ass, apparently. You can't shut up,"
Mac interrupted.
"Shannon, don't serve him. He's still on medicine. Drug interactions? Guess the idiot just forgot. Bring us some food, would you please? I don't care what, something fast."
With a curious look from one man to the other, Shannon said, "He ordered a cheeseburger."
"That'll work. Make it 2.
Taking Josh's forearm in a firm grip, and with a little more force than necessary to deal with a man with healing ribs, Mac hauled him to his feet.
"Let's get a table."
Josh yanked out of the older man's grip and considered marching out the door. But he couldn't make himself do it. He was hungry for news of Caitlin. Sullenly, he followed Mac to an isolated corner table. Once they were seated, Mac scowled angrily and asked,
"What the hell? You trying to kill yourself, J.B.?"
"J.B., she told you."
"She knows?" "Huh. That's a surprise she never let on. I didn't think you'd told her."
"I didn't. She figured it out herself."
"Ah."
Mac nodded as if a puzzle piece had just fallen into place.
"No wonder she left you. You lied to her. That's one of her big taboos."
Josh knew he should keep his mouth shut, but he felt compelled to defend himself.
"I didn't lie to her. I am Paul and Cindy Christopher's son. They are my family. I am Joshua Tarkington. I changed my name legally." "So I understand."
That took Josh aback. He hadn't shared that particular fact with Caitlin.
"How do you know?" "Before the accident in December, I hired a private investigator to check you out."
Josh's eyes rounded in surprise. Guess he should have anticipated that.
What did you expect to learn? That I was a thief, an ex-con, a father of five who deserted my family?
I didn't know what to expect. Max shrugged. My little girl was starry-eyed over you, and all I knew about you was that you came out of the Oklahoma foster care system. I had concerns.
I'll just bet you did, Josh muttered.
So why haven't you outed me to the entire town?
I considered it.
Mac paused when he saw Shannon approaching with two glasses of ice and a pitcher of water.
Burgers will be right out, she informed them as she filled the glasses.
Thanks, Shannon.
Mac smiled up at their hostess, and when she walked away, he sipped his water and said,
Look, I didn't like you because you reminded me of myself. Did Caitlin ever tell you that I came out of the Oklahoma foster system, too?
Josh looked at him in surprise.
She never mentioned that. I don't go around bragging about it, believe me. My mother was a bitch on wheels, drug and alcohol abuser, a grifter. She'd steal the wimple off a nun whether she had use for it or not. More than once, she abandoned me in a flea trap of a motel, and it's but by the grace of God that I didn't follow in her footsteps. It could have gone the other way just as easily. So when you caught Caitlin's attention, it worried me. I looked at you and I saw myself. I wasn't very nice to you.
Really? Josh drawled. I hadn't noticed.
Mac grinned. Smartass.
Josh was just grumpy enough to press it.
Weren't you a federal judge once upon a time? I thought judges waited for evidence before they reached a verdict.
I'm a father first. That means I automatically don't like any hairy-legged boy who comes sniffing after my little girl. That's probably never going to change, because no guy will ever be good enough for her.
Shannon delivered two platters piled high with burgers and fries to the table, and Mac waited to say more until they'd both consumed half their meal. The cheeseburger tasted surprisingly good to Josh, and the meal, together with the company, managed to distract him from the clawing need that had sent him from his house in search of relief. Feeling more mellow than he had all day, he decided to offer Mac Timberlake a gift.
Don't worry. I know I'm not good enough for her. That's why we're not together anymore.
Mac ate half a fry in one bite, chewed thoughtfully, then said,
That's Pastor Poo.
Excuse me?
B.S. You're not together anymore because you're trying hard to make the same mistake I almost made. They say girls look for men like their father to marry. I'd hoped Kate would choose better than that, but the girl has always been hard-headed.
Whoa, 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 Mary? I never said anything about marriage.
That's because you're being an idiot. You're letting your past control your future without any acknowledgement of the person you've become in the present.
Mac popped the rest of his fry into his mouth.
I did the same damn thing. I let fear rule my actions and emotions and almost ruin my relationship with the love of my life. Be smarter than me. Life is short, Tarkington. Too damn short. Don't waste it by living in the past.
Mac took his napkin from his lap and wiped his mouth, then removed his wallet from his pocket and pulled out a 20.
I heard what I wanted to hear from you today. You're Tarkington, not Mr. Movie Star.
That's good.
He tossed the bill onto the table.
I understand you gave Caitlin some fancy jewelry. That's a nice start, but you can do better.
Better than the Sokolov emeralds?
I'm wealthy, but I'm not stupid rich.
Just stupid,
Mac muttered, making a disgusted roll of his eyes.
Caitlin gave you something infinitely more valuable than diamonds and emeralds, Tarkington. My daughter gave you the most valuable gift in existence. She gave you her heart. Treasure it. Cherish it. Be worthy of it.
Despair rose within Josh.
But that's just it. I'm not. I never will be.
He gritted his teeth and looked at Caitlin's father.
I'm not whole. Hell, pup. None of us are whole. You gotta slap on a bandage and keep on going.
You don't understand. Mac's voice softened.
You'd be surprised at what I understand. My PI created a thorough file.
He knows. Josh shut his eyes as shame washed over him.
I'm surprised you haven't shot me.
Why?
Seems to me that you had plenty of help getting into that dark world. That wasn't your fault. It shows your character that you had the balls to get out.
You're never out. Not really. You take it day to day, so you're never really out.
Maybe so. But you have something, someone, to keep you looking forward to the next day.
Mac rose to leave, but stopped beside Josh and put a hand on his shoulder.
Don't give up, son. You have friends here. You have family. You have people who love you. A fine, fabulous woman who loves you. You don't have to do this alone. Let us help you.
He gave Josh's shoulder a squeeze, then departed. Minutes ticked by as Josh sat without moving.
It wasn't my fault? Did he really say that? Did he really believe it?
Do I? To a point? Yes. He'd been thrown into the deep end by parents who should have done better by him. He had managed to avoid drowning, and he'd crawled his way back onto solid ground. He could do it again. Couldn't he? If it meant a future with Caitlin? When he finally stood, his hamburger sat like a rock in his gut. The craving that had subsided during the conversation with Mac returned, crawling on spider's legs up his spine. A light snow fell from the darkening sky and muffled the sound of traffic on the street. Josh shoved his bare hands into his pockets and sucked in a deep breath, filling his lungs with bitter air, and in the process, reminding himself of his illness and that his bones had yet to completely heal. Shivering, he started to walk, not toward his car, but toward the building 2 blocks away, where a red neon sign read, "Urgent Care." The moisture leaking from the corners of his eyes was a reaction to the cold. Not tears, not tears.
My daughter gave you the most valuable gift in existence. She gave you her heart. Treasure it. Cherish it. Be worthy of it. God help me.
The clinic's automatic doors swung open and Josh stepped inside. The receptionist smiled at him. May I help you?
Which physician is working tonight?
Dr. Cicero has this evening's shift.
Not Alvarado. Does it matter? I like Rose. She might be easier to talk to.
I'd like to see her, please. The receptionist handed him a clipboard. Please fill out this paperwork and return it to me when you're done. It's been a slow evening so far. You shouldn't have too long a wait.
Thank you.
Within 10 minutes, he was called back to exam room 3. A nurse took his vital signs and asked the reason for his visit.
I'd rather wait and explain to the doctor, please.
All right. Dr. Cicero will be in shortly. He listened to a baby crying in a room across the hall and stared unseeing at a poster of the digestive system. A few minutes later, the door opened and Rose Cicero stepped inside. Hello, Josh. I hope you're not here to tell me you've injured your poor ribs again.
No. No, that's not it.
Josh raked his fingers through his hair.
Rose, I'm in trouble. The pain pills have become a problem for me. I should have told Dr. Alvarado I need help.
He exhaled hard, shut his eyes, and confessed,
I'm an addict.
Journal entry.
I can't remember the last time I was this afraid. Maybe the night my father died, or the time when I was 8 and realized my mother had left me alone in the house when she went off to Paris with a lover. Perhaps it was the first time I woke up from a heroin overdose. Whatever. I don't guess it matters.
Suffice it to say that I'm pretty damn scared. Because I have hope again. Hope. It's a crazy deal. It can be small as a pinprick, but more powerful than 100,000 candle power flashlight. I went by her house, stood outside in the snow, watching the warm light in her window. She saw me. For a long moment, our gazes met and held. She didn't invite me in. I didn't knock on her door. I'm afraid I should have left well enough alone.
Chapter 20. It snowed almost every day for the next week, but the storm never intensified to the blizzard conditions meteorologists had predicted. On Gingerbread House's opening day, the sun shone in a brilliant blue sky and made the icicles hanging from the eaves sparkle like diamonds. For the most part, the children who arrived for their first day of school were delighted. As to be expected, a few of the little ones cried and clung, but Caitlin and her team had been ready with distractions. At the end of the day, when she shared a glass of celebratory champagne with her staff, everyone agreed that the opening had been a smashing success. If Caitlin regretted that a certain someone had not been there to share the moment with her, well, his loss, she said as she turned out the lights and locked the door behind her. She made it a point not to glance next door as she made her way home. That didn't mean she didn't keep an eye on his house and business throughout each day. She couldn't help herself. Her office windows gave her a bird's-eye view, and besides, the man was outside all of the time. The first time she'd seen him shoveling snow, she'd almost marched outside to scold him. That couldn't be good for his ribs, could it? But an internet search and a count of the week since the accidents reassured her. Still, when she saw him tackle Harriet's drive, she couldn't help but fret that he was overdoing it. He also went on walks. A lot of them. It seemed like every time she happened to glance his direction, he was either coming or going from his house or garage. She told herself it was his way of dealing with the loneliness in his life, now that she wasn't a daily part of it. She even believed that. A little bit, anyway. Her brother Stephen made it home for his visit, and she proudly gave him a tour of Gingerbread House. "This is great, sis," he told her. "You've knocked it out of the park. I'll admit I agreed with Mom's viewpoint that you were making a mistake by moving home and opening this business. I was wrong." She linked her arm with his and gave him a patronizing pat. "Coming from you, those three little words mean so much. Brat, I love you too." The entire family gathered that night up at Heartache Falls for Stephen's welcome home dinner. It was a fun, relaxing evening, full of laughter and teasing and reminiscing, and of course, fabulous food. She and Lori and Chase had come prepared to stay overnight in case the forecasted heavy snowstorm transpired. When it came time to leave, the sky was clear, but Allie so wanted all her chicks beneath the same roof for just one night that nobody could tell her no. The promise of Belgian waffles for breakfast sealed the deal. When Caitlin climbed into bed, for the first time in weeks, she didn't feel lonely. Family truly was the best medicine. Lying in bed next to his peacefully sleeping wife in the master bedroom, her father's thoughts followed a similar path as he reflected upon the evening. He'd enjoyed talking about the old neighborhood with the kids. They'd brought up instances and events that he hadn't thought of in years. The night had been a gift. More than once he'd looked around the room and sent up a prayer of thanksgiving for his family and the love they shared. It would give them strength in the days ahead. With the snow coming down heavy and the promise of Allie's Belgian waffles in the morning, they'd all agreed to overnight here at the house. Mac decided that tomorrow after breakfast, he was going to tell them about the diagnosis. It made sense to do it now, while Stephen was home. The appointment was a little over 2 weeks away, so they wouldn't be on pins and needles for long.
Plus, he'd been squirming a bit ever since his conversation with Tarkington had touched on lies. Caitlin would not be happy with him. Technically, he hadn't